Check out the Full Press Hockey Podcast with Jim Behringer, the best in the business. It's going to be great.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Full Press NHL Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Behringer, the voice of Full Press Hockey. I'm joined by retired National Hockey League official. You can hear him on the Snipes and Stars podcast, Tim Peel. Tim, thank you for coming to the show today.
Thanks for having me, Jim. I appreciate it.
Hey, the Stanley Cup playoffs are underway, and everybody seems to put the officials in the spotlight this time of year, and they do it all the time in the regular season too, but it seems to be a more glaring and a more of a spotlight on you guys during the playoffs. What's the protocol like going into the playoffs for the officials in the NHL?
You know, the only thing that's more guaranteed other than death and taxes is complaining about officiating in the playoffs. It is the exact same conversation every year. And I get it. Our fans are so passionate. Some fan bases more than others want to always blame the officiating. And you know what? I just don't buy into it. I've watched a lot of games as you have. Yeah, there's going to be calls here and there that people don't like. But I haven't seen one game decided that everyone says the reason this team lost is because of the officiating. I just haven't seen it. And I'm very trying to be unbiased. And listen, there's calls that I don't necessarily agree with, but that's like it is in any sport. But I haven't seen any game that the fans can specifically say our team lost because of a call.
No, I agree with you. And my uncle, God rest his soul, he always said, if you're complaining about the officiating, your team wasn't good enough to win. So God bless him. And, you know, I take that to heart because I officiate too on a high school level. And when I officiate, I act like I'm playing too when I'm a referee. I don't want to decide the game. I want them to decide it. And I'm going to let little stuff go that, you know what? Hey, guys, it's the playoffs. A little bumping, a little chirping, whatever you guys want to do. You guys decide it because I don't want to be the reason that you lost the game.
Well, your uncle's smart because saying that I heard that all the time from Barry Trotz, from different guys that I really respected a lot in the NHL. Good teams don't complain about the officiating. And that's a very good point that you've made there.
So one of the reasons I wanted to have you on was because of what we saw in the Leafs-Bruins series, that game three with Marchand, Bertuzzi. You know, you can say maybe penalties there, but I like the fact that they let them go there. I mean, the bet on the Maple Leafs for just letting Marchand dictate play and getting in your head. You know what? To me personally, there's nothing there. You got to play through it. It's the playoffs, right, Tim?
Yeah, no, exactly. And if you watch that play, Bertuzzi, yeah, he gets tripped up, but he also embellishes it too. He jumps forward, he dives forward. I don't have a problem with the officials just letting that go tit for tat. You know, Bertuzzi was just as guilty as Marchand. And maybe the Leafs, you know, I said today, and it's kind of starting to go viral today, is Back in the podcast that I do with Jeremy Rowan, it's called Snipes and Stripes. I did it back in November when Marchand got tangled up with Liljegren in Boston, and Liljegren, their defenseman, missed several weeks because of that. He left the ice, and not one Toronto Maple Leaf player did anything to Marchand. The captain didn't. Reeves didn't. Nobody did anything. And I said back in, it was November 9th, I said, I truly believe that the Toronto Maple Leafs should strip the captaincy from Jonathan Tavares. He is not a leader. He's a very good player. He's been a great player for a long time. Hall of Fame numbers probably. But he is not a leader. He's been with the Leafs now for 6 years. They've only got out of the first round once. His career with the Islanders, Jim, he did nothing with the Islanders, and he is the so-called quasi-leader. We've got, I said Marchand. Brad Marchand will spear you in the face. He may cross-check you in the mouth. He may try to kill you to score a goal, But if the game's on the line and I've got to put money on Brad Marchand or Austin Matthews, I'm putting it on Brad Marchand. And you've been around long enough, you know that's what it takes to win in the playoffs.
Absolutely. I've been watching playoff hockey and watching hockey for a long, long time, played the game. I understand when it gets to playoff time, you got to get to those hard areas. You want those guys on your team that get under guys' skins. I said going into this series, I said, oh, Maple Leafs, you know, oh, they got the better team. They should beat Boston. Boston's a weaker team. I'm like, what have you watched to see that Toronto's going to beat this team? Boston's in their head. Jim Montgomery made the right decision going with Jeremy Swayman. You can't let those guys affect the series because Toronto's already mentally weak as it is as a team when they're in the playoffs. And I agree with you about Tavares. And I've gone back even further when they signed a contract. I didn't think the contract that he got from Toronto, I didn't think Toronto needed to sign him. They had too many holes to fill with defense and goaltending. They could have used that $11 million elsewhere. And if Boston finishes him off Tuesday night, I would hope there would be some changes in Toronto.
There's got to be changes. You have to change things up there. You've got the players fighting on the bench. Nylander doesn't get a free pass either, because what I don't understand, and I've talked to some ex-NHL players about this the last couple of days, the rumor was they came out and said he had migraines. But then if he had migraines, I don't know how you can barely, you know, walk around your house, let alone try to play in an NHL playoff game. So if he had migraines, absolutely. But then when he gets interviewed, they say, how are you feeling? Oh, good. I've been skating for the last 3 days. I feel good. Well, if you've been skating for the last 3 days, how come you haven't been in the lineup? I'm confused by the mixed messages here. And then you've got him and Marner fighting on the bench and him telling Marner this isn't junior hockey. And it's a shit show right now in Boston. And you've got Keefe, who I don't know how this guy, even though Brad Treleaven gave him a 3-year deal, before the season started, I don't know how he finishes the last 2 years of his deal, because you're down 2 goals at home. It's game 4 of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And in the last 3 minutes, you're putting out Ryan Reeves on the ice and you're down 2 goals. Ryan Reeves is the reason that the first goal was scored, because he couldn't get the puck off the sidewall and get it out into the neutral zone. And you're putting Ryan Reeves out in the last 3 minutes of a hockey game. I am double shifting the two lines, the first two lines. I am double shifting them every chance I get. So I don't understand some of their decisions. Listen, I don't think at the end of the day, everyone was kind of, and I was on the same boat a month or two ago. I go, I don't think Toronto's D is good enough, but maybe their goaltending. That hasn't been the problem. The problem has been scoring goals. And just, I don't see the leadership in that team that I see with other teams.
Well, you've been around and you've ref a lot of playoff games and you see it. Yes, those bottom six guys, they're contributors, but you've seen it with the good teams. Their star players step up in the playoffs. You've ref a ton of games in the National Hockey League. You know, you've ref playoff games, Stanley Cup final games. When a game matters, star players step up, and Toronto star players are not stepping up.
They're not, and it's, this core four, it's, I don't think it's going to be the core four going forward. Listen, and it's not Brad Treleaven's fault. This is his first year as a general manager taking over this team, but I'm sure he's sitting there going, I got to change things up, but I don't know how I'm going to do it, because you've got guys making $8, $9, $10 million, $11 million a year. It's tough to find a dance partner when it comes to trying to make a trade like that, because not a lot of teams have cap room in order to bring on a contract like that. So it's going to be a big challenge for him in the offseason. The Toronto media and the Toronto fans are going to have an absolute meltdown if this team gets beat tomorrow night. If I'm Jim Montgomery, and I love Monty, I'm friends with him from days off the ice, him living in St. Louis, and I'm not going to text him and ask him, tell him, give him my thoughts. But if I was him, as you know, he was flip-flopping every game, Ellmark and Swayman. This is now the second time. This is the first time all year that he went with Swayman, the second time he played him the other night back-to-back. I think you got to go with Swayman again. Finish him off. Do not give them any life, because if you give them some life and you go back to Toronto, game six, we saw what happened last year with Boston and Florida. Boston was up 3-1. They're 5 seconds away from eliminating Florida in a five-game series when Brad Marchand had the breakaway. And Florida comes back, wins that game, wins it in overtime. And we know the rest is history. They win the series and go on to the Stanley Cup final. So if I'm Boston, I go with Swayman and I go, let's get rid of them and get some rest for our guys.
Yeah, I was a big proponent going into game four that it's Jeremy Swayman's net. I am still a big proponent of it. I believe he's the number one guy in Boston. I know he's due for a new contract in the summer. We know the issues with Allmark at the trade deadline. Look, it's a great tandem. These guys work well together. But I agree. You got to put the nail in the coffin and just put the pedal to the metal. Toronto can't beat Swayman. Swayman is in the zone right now, and you ride with one guy, and you have to ride with Jeremy Swayman. He's playing so well right now.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I agree. You know, and Boston, I don't think Boston is as good a team as they are last year, and I think that's why a lot of people, you know, you lose Bergeron and Krejci up front, but they've got a solid D. They can roll four lines. See, that's the difference between Toronto and Boston. Pat Maroon, he's my buddy. He's
so good. Patty. I love him. So good.
Slower than molasses, right? Like, you know, but he knows how to play in the playoffs. He knows to get the puck deep. He gets below that goal line. He protects it with his big body, makes smart plays. I just think they're deeper overall than the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Yesterday, you know, we saw offside challenge yesterday on Sunday's game with, I believe, Colorado-Winnipeg, when Winnipeg tied the game. You know, we come to these challenges now, and, you know, it's kind of, I don't want to say slowed the game down, but it's kind of hard when it takes that long. I put out a tweet and I said, you know, if it's going to take this long to figure out if it was offside or not, just keep the call on the ice and let's just keep playing hockey, because sometimes these offside challenges and these challenges take longer than they should. I want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, it's a very valid point, and it's like it. But unfortunately, we're at this stage in sports throughout the world right now where video replay has become so vital and so important, because I think the predominating factor because of this is because of social media. Social media has driven a lot of this, because if a play is missed, if there's a high stick miss, if there's whatever is missed during the game, it's on social media within 2 minutes. Can you imagine if we didn't have video review for offsides and a goal was scored and it was offside? It would run rampant. The only, to your point, it's a very valid point. I wish they had some sort of time limit on it. Whether it's 2 minutes, 3 minutes, because when we get into these 4, 5, 6 minute delays, four, 5 minutes doesn't sound like that long. But when you're an official on the ice or a player or the fans in the building, that 4 or 5 minutes literally feels like 10, 12 minutes. It's unbelievable. And I think our linesmen, I think the percentage was 97 or 98%. This year on calls correct at the on the blue line as far as video coaches challenge. Our linesmen are extremely good at calling these offsides and normally getting them right. But it's the old, you know, you're not putting the toothpaste back in the bottle, that the genie's been let out, and it's something we have to live with. Is it something that maybe we can adapt over adjust over the next year or two, as far as, like you mentioned, maybe putting a time clock on it? I think it's something that we should look at least.
You know, one of the big things for me on the offside is if the entry happens like 30 to 40 seconds before the goal scored, I'm like, this doesn't have any effect on the goal being scored. And I think I've heard that one a lot too. I don't know. What do you think?
I agree 1,000% on that. I hate that. But you know, the puck goes in and 30, 40 seconds later, they score. They've been cycling in the corner for the last 15, 20 seconds. Puck goes up the sidewall. And then all of a sudden we're taking it back for because the player was a quarter of an inch or a half an inch offside. It sucks the energy out of the building. Like, can you imagine if this was game seven of the Stanley Cup Finals and a team has thought they won in overtime and they're clearing the bet and all of a sudden it gets taken back? That sucks. And it will happen.
Well, what do we always say? I think somebody would always say, bring up the point with the puck over glass. Imagine if that determined a game in the Stanley Cup Final with the puck over glass. I mean, I'm kind of glad they're reviewing it because to the point, it's like, all right, guy's pressuring you, goes off a stick, does it hit the glass?
Right.
That one's so black and white. Everything else is reviewable, but that one was so black and white. I'm kind of glad that they're kind of adopting it somewhat to review little things here and there to it.
I agree. I think, but I'm good with where we're at right now.
Yeah.
Doing things. You know, when I was in the league, well, the last couple of years, we, you know, if I called a match penalty or a major penalty for a headshot, I wasn't allowed to review it, and I had to live with it. And people, they go, well, headshots are easy to call. Well, no, actually, they're not. Like, we see the one with Panarin and Kane the other day, or TJ Oshie. And Oshie even said on air yesterday, he goes, I don't have a problem with the hit because it got him here. It came up and got him in the head. But in real time, it's really tough to tell whether did he get him in the shoulder first and then get him in the head, or did he pick his head? So I like that we're able to review that, because as an official, you call a 5-minute penalty and then you find out you were wrong and that team's on the power play or that team's shorthanded for 5 minutes. You want to dig a hole in the ice and crawl under it. Same thing with high stick double minors. We had to live with it. And the worst feeling in the world is, you know, I'm working in New Jersey or Madison Square Garden and I call a double minor and then the coach of that team says, Tim, it was his own guy that got him. And you're just like, you feel terrible. Like, people don't understand that us as officials, we feel terrible. So it's good that the game has adopted video replay for those sorts of things, because we don't want to see a game won or lost because of something like that.
So the guys you worked with and the guys now in the league, they're really in favor of video review, helping them out on the ice, because there are some things that they do miss.
Yeah, absolutely. There's things missed all the time, but I don't think we need to start reviewing trips and hooks and slashes and so on. I think the headshots, goalie interference, puck over the goal line, double minors, things that could have a big impact on the game. A trip in the neutral zone really isn't going to have a big impact on the game. We don't need to review those sorts of things. But I think we're at a good place now where, yeah, our guys want help. Our guys want to get it right. And at the end of the day, that's all they care about. Because when you leave the building and you missed a double minor, or you called a double minor that wasn't a double minor back years ago, that's all they talk about. Well, now we get it right and the officials can leave the building and nobody's talking about that.
That's good. You know, you mentioned goalie interference. It feels like that's also a hot topic when it comes to review as well. You know, what goes, when you guys go over there, look at it, when there's a challengeable play for goalie interference, it feels like it's like the pass interference and then catch, no catch in the NFL. And we have that in the National Hockey League. What are you looking for when you guys review that to either keep the goal or wave it off?
We're looking at, did the forward or offending player, attacking player, did he go into the goal crease by himself? The goalie has to be able to properly play his position. So did that player go into the goal crease and impede that goalie's ability to play the position? If we had one a couple days ago where Florida's goal stood because Matthew Tkachuk got pushed into the goaltender, those goals are allowed. There's lots of times when an attacking player is there on the crease and he gets pushed in by the defenseman, those goals are allowed. So our antennas go up when an attacking player goes into the crease and is not impeded and makes contact or prevents the goalie from properly playing his position. But listen, there's a lot of gray area too. Unfortunately, it's not black and white. And people say, well, make it black and white. Well, you know what? Ask fans in Buffalo. It was supposed to be black and white when Brett Hull's foot was in the crease. And that it, you know, those goals back in February and March were taken away, but they allowed this goal. And that was the worst rule that we ever brought in, was the toe in the crease, and it was no goal. So, but that was brought in to try to clear up the inconsistency with goalie interference. And you can't make it black and white. There's a lot of gray there, and coaches want there to be a lot of gray. Coaches don't want it to be black and white. Players don't want it to be black and white. There's a lot of gray area involved.
When you are on the ice and during these games, especially in the playoffs, but I hear it when guys are mic'd up, even in the regular season, is there a lot of communication going on with not only with your partners out on the rink, but the players as well?
Absolutely. You know, one of the best guys of being in the crease or being around the crease all the time was Corey Perry. And Corey would just conveniently fall on the goalie and when the whistle would happen. And, you know, I love the guy. I respect him because his longevity is phenomenal. But, yeah, no, Dustin Brown would be the same way when Dustin played for L.A. And you would talk to those guys and say, hey, stay out of the crease. And then next chance you got, you'd go up to them and say, hey, listen, you are living on the edge right now. I'm just letting you know. You are right on the edge. And then you go to the goalie, and the goalies would appreciate it. You'd say to you know, Marty Brodeur, hey, Marty, I'm watching Sean Avery, for example. I'm watching him. I've got him. I've got your back. I'll cover the crease. I'll protect you. And the goalies would be like, thanks a lot, PLZ. I appreciate that. So there's the best refs are guys that communicate, such as Kelly Sutherland, Wes McCauley, Chris Rooney, Dan O'Rourke, these guys. That's why they are probably our top officials, because they know how to communicate with the players and the coaches.
One more officiating question before we dive into some of the other series around the league. When it comes to the Stanley Cup playoffs, is there a process you guys have to go through, like during the regular season, on who gets picked to do these playoff games?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So there's 34 referees, and they take 20 of them to the playoffs. So throughout the year, you are graded on every game that you officiate, and you either have a supervisor in-house at the game, or somebody's watching it in Toronto out of the situation room. So every game you ref throughout the season is supervised. And then in January, you get what you call a mid-season report, and it tells you, hey, you're doing this, and this well, but I need you to improve on the hooking standard, the slashing standard. I need you to improve in these areas. And so then what happens at the end of the season, Stephen Walkham will have a meeting with all his supervisors. There's approximately 8 of them now in the NHL. And they'll sit down and they will grade everybody, all 34 refs. And, you know, the first probably 10 or 12 are pretty consistent. We know, you know, and then the last 6 or 8, okay, who's working well? You know what? I've seen this guy work in the last 2 months. He's really working well. Yeah, I know he's never got playoffs, but I really think he deserves a shot. And then someone says, you know, and then this guy that's been working playoffs the last couple of years, I've seen him a lot the last few weeks. He's really struggling. And so they'll take guys that have been in the playoffs and they'll put them on the bench, and guys that have never worked the playoffs, they'll move them in. So, and then after the first round, then the big cut, the big cut comes. They go from 20 to 12. They cut 8 guys after the first round. So just like we go from 16 teams to 8 teams in the playoffs, as far as officials, we go from 20 to 12. And you want to be that one of those 12 guys for a couple of reasons. One is pride factor, because you want to be considered one of the best refs in the league amongst your peers and your bosses. And the other reason is you get a playoff bonus per round. So you get a playoff bonus in round 1, 2, 3, and 4. So guys can make a lot of extra money in the playoffs.
And I remember being in the building in 2012 for the Stanley Cup final, and I was standing next to some an official. They always have extra guys in the building, correct? In case somebody gets hurt, especially that time of year.
Correct. Always in the playoffs, we have standby linesmen, standby referees. Very rare do we have that in the regular season because of the number of games going every night, and logistically it's just impossible to have a standby official at all the games. And it's important for us to have standby officials because I worked a couple games where guys either got injured or they became sick before the game, and I had to go out and referee it by myself. And it's extremely difficult in a one-man system now. You know, someone was asking me the other day, well, how come we can't go back to the one-man system? I said, well, first of all, when we had the one referee system, you had the red line in for an offside pass, so a defenseman could pass it, but as far as he could pass it from his end would be inside his red line. Well, now, so a referee could have the opportunity to catch up to the play, but now without the red line, he can fire it from the goal line all the way up to the far blue line. So it's just physically, it's impossible for the guys to keep up.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And like we said off the top, the standard doesn't change. It's the playoffs and you have to fight through these things. Correct, Tim?
Yeah, absolutely.
And speaking of fighting through, you mentioned Corey Perry before. I love what he's brought to the Edmonton Oilers. They have a different feel this year. I don't know what about you, but I feel like the addition of Corey Perry has really given this team an edge.
Yeah, Corey Perry, Connor, I think it's Connor Carrick, I picked up from Anaheim. Yeah. Adam Henrique was a good pickup. You know, their bottom six wasn't very good in the last couple of years, and now their bottom six is very good. Good enough that Evander Kane has played a lot on the third line during this season. But, you know, as you've seen in the last couple games, he's been up on the second line, a few shifts even on the first line, because he brings that physical dimension that you need in the playoffs. And I happened to talk to Evander a couple days ago, and I said, how's the feeling there right now? And he says, Timmy, we feel this year, we feel like this is a team for the first time in the last two or three years, that this is a team that we can really make a run at the Stanley Cup. So it's going to be interesting, because I'll be honest, after game one, I thought Winnipeg looked fantastic, and all of a sudden Colorado rattled off three in a row. They look like they're going to take out Winnipeg. It certainly looks like Edmonton's going to take out LA. Dallas, I could see that going seven games. You know, even though they lost the first two at home, Dallas is a very good hockey club. And it's going to be really interesting. The playoffs are the best time of year.
I love the playoffs. I mean, look, I was kind of shocked that Florida and Tampa it's 3-1 Florida, because I just expected, I guess, different. But when you have goalies making saves the way they're making saves in the playoffs, I mean, series-changing save by Bobrovsky. He's up for the Vezina. There's a reason for that. Freddie Anderson in Carolina made two in game three. I mean, and then what we saw in Music City in Nashville on Sunday, I mean, up 3-2, open net, and then you lose in overtime. That changes the series too.
Up 3-1 and with 2 minutes and 45 seconds to go, and Colton Sissons hits the post. Getting on the plane. They're going to be going 2-2 back to Vancouver. And all of a sudden, Brock Besser scores with 8 seconds to go. And then I sent a message to Rick Tocchet today. I said, you probably need to put a ski mask on, because you guys stole that game from Nashville yesterday. They're playing their third string goalie in Artur Silvas.
Yeah.
There's no way that they should have won that game. You know, but credit to them. It's that I felt bad, because I really like Ryan O'Reilly. I like the Nashville organization. They've got great fans there, and I wanted to go a 6-7 game series, and it still might. But that was a huge win for Vancouver yesterday.
Oh, huge win for them for sure. And then obviously the Rangers take care of business as they should against Washington. I think just Washington, to be honest, just ran out of gas. They get in. They had some help. You get in. And then, you know, again, We saw it with Toronto, Boston. Maybe Rempe's in their head. Maybe Thomas is not playing his game. But Rangers take care of business the way they should post to take care of business.
You know, I really think, Jim, I think Detroit or Pittsburgh would have given the Rangers a better run. I don't think we would have seen a sweep with either one of those teams. You know, think about this. Washington is the only team to make the playoffs that had a minus goal differential. You don't make the playoffs, they're minus 34. So they scored less goals than they allowed, but they got into the playoffs. That tells you how bad Pittsburgh and Detroit shit the bed the last 2 weeks of the season, because I felt like one of those teams could have done a better job against the Rangers.
I agree. I thought Detroit probably over Pittsburgh, because I just didn't have Pittsburgh as a playoff team this year. But you know what? Either team, because Crosby knows how to step up. Those guys know how to step up against the Rangers in the playoffs. It's going to be very interesting. And again, like I said off the top, the spotlight's always on the referees. And there's a saying, one of the guys I reffed with, I got to give a shout out to my buddy Ken Skimmelhorn that I did work with outdoor roller hockey. He said, no one ever lost a game in roller hockey history. It was always the referee's fault. And we always used to say nothing less than a felony gets called in the playoffs. So just a shout out to him, because he was a great partner and he taught me a lot as an official.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, I can't wait to continue. And Tim, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. Really insightful. I can't wait to do it again if you have time.
No, absolutely. And you know what? By looking at all your apparel back there collections, I see you're a Jersey fan, and I see Marty Brodeur around here a lot in St. Louis. And you know what? It was just a tough year for the Devils with all the injuries they had. They didn't get the goaltending they expected, but the future is bright for the New Jersey Devils. They've got a good young hockey team, and I bet you we will see them back in the playoffs next year.
I agree with that. I think so. They just got to get the coach right. And, you know, real quick before we get out of here, your thoughts, if they do it, Craig Berube in New Jersey as a coach?
I think Craig Berube anywhere would be a good addition for that team. It'll be interesting to see what Tommy Fitzgerald, what he's got in mind. You know, I think it was time to move on from Lindy and get some new blood in there. It just depends what type of coach they're looking for. You know, a lot of times they say, oh, geez, we regurgitate coaches. Well, the reason they do that is, and coaches will tell you this, they learn from every job that they had why they didn't succeed, why they eventually got fired, and they try to change things. So they all of a sudden just don't become a bad coach. It's you know, Craig Berube all of a sudden didn't become a bad coach in here. It was guys like Jordan Kyrou that weren't listening to him and buying into a system. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, we had another coach today, Dave Haxtell, fired from Seattle. There's a lot of job openings right now. Ottawa's open. Jersey's open. San Jose's open.
Yeah.
That one was a head scratcher.
Yeah. You know,
and especially Mike Greer is a BU alum along with David Quinn. And there's a reason that, you know, you could have had Scotty Bowman coaching that team this year and they were probably still going to finish in last place. So there's probably something there behind the scenes that more to the story than we know, but there's lots of job openings. So it's a good time to be an unemployed coach in the NHL right now, because you're a good chance you're going to get hired before the season.
Absolutely, Tim. Absolutely. I totally agree with you. Tim Peel, retired NHL official, get him on the Snipes and Stripes podcast with Jeremy Roenick. Their new episode is out. I just saw a clip today, what you were talking about before on a podcast. Great podcast. So guys, check that out. But again, Tim Peel, thank you so much for joining the Full Press NHL podcast today.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, absolutely. Anytime. Guys, get this Full Press NHL podcast up on Full Press Hockey on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Take care and enjoy the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Barry Trotz, Nashville Predators, making sure you're listening to Full Press Hockey podcast.